content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Dick Hayden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Sports Illustrated Kids, and we'll find out what's going on in the world of sports for you. Let's begin our program with selections from the January and February 2021 issue of Sports Illustrated. And we're going to be looking at a section called Trending. And James Wiseman is the center for the Golden State Warriors. And we're going to see what we can find out about him. After last season at the University of Memphis, this seven-footer is ready to make an impact with his new team, which is also looking to bounce back after a very rough year. It's by Chris Mannix as the writer. For the last year or so, meditation has been a huge part of James Wiseman's daily routine. Kobe Bryant meditated, and Wiseman absorbs everything about the late Lakers star, from watching his online interviews to reading his Wizenard series of children books. For 10 to 20 minutes every morning, Wiseman will just calmly breathe. He needed the time to himself. It allowed him to forget about the hardships of growing up in a modest house in Nashville, where food could be scarce and a good week was when the lights were on. He would also forget about the University of Memphis, about a once promising college experience that ended almost before it started. In the fall of 2019, Wiseman, a 7 foot, 1 inch tall center, was a 5-star recruit who signed with the Tigers. Coached by local legend and former NBA star Enference Penny Hardaway. But due to a lengthy legal fight with the NCAA, Wiseman played only 3 games before withdrawing from school in mid-December. It was difficult. His mother, Donzelli Artis, says it took away his love for basketball. I could see it in him. It felt like his world was crumbling. So in the months leading up to the NBA draft, Wiseman had a lot on his mind. I wanted to embrace my college with my teammates and win a national championship, have fun, and live out the dream, says Wiseman. You know how life is. Life happens. This year, though, it's been kind of crazy. But Wiseman knew that he had to keep moving forward. So once he finished his daily meditation, he would hit the court. For months, he trained at the Miami Hoop School. He worked out 3 times a day, packing muscle onto his 250-pound frame and extending his range to fit the mold of the modern NBA center. It all paid off in November when the Golden State Warriors took him with the 2nd pick in the NBA draft, and it allowed him to finally put his troubles behind him. Growing up in Nashville, Wiseman was a familiar figure at the Village Trail section of town. He could be found banging in shots at all hours, often under the glow of streetlights. His sister, Jaquarius, 7 years older, was a frequent one-on-one partner, as were a handful of cousins who lived nearby. Wiseman loved basketball. He just didn't always like the physicality of it. As a 4-year-old, he was allowed to play with 4th graders because of his height. In church league games, an oversized Wiseman would stand in the corner, arms crossed above his head. He didn't want anyone to touch him, Artis said. She signed him up to play football in elementary school. He got used to contact quickly and was ready to bang on the court. By 8th grade, Wiseman had shot up to 6 feet 8 inches tall, my goodness. And from then on, it was only basketball. He started showing up at the neighborhood court, a skinny 13-year-old looking to get into games with men in their mid-20s. They used to rough me up, says Wiseman, but that's how I gained my mental toughness. After his sophomore year of high school, Wiseman transferred to Memphis to play at East High for Hardaway, who had been one of his heroes growing up. Penny Hardaway helped out the family with some money to help cover their moving expenses. That became a problem when Hardaway was hired by Memphis and Wiseman committed to play for him. Since Hardaway had starred at Memphis, He was technically a booster, and when Wiseman committed to the Tigers, that made the previous payment an illegal enticement. Wiseman played three games, averaging 19.7 points, 10.3 rebounds, and 3.0 blocks in 23 minutes per game. Then the NCAA suspended him. He could serve his suspension and rejoin the Tigers in mid-January, in time for the American Athletic Conference tourney. He had remained eligible, he says. He had a 4.0 GPA in his first semester. Always a dedicated student, he speaks conversational Mandarin and has dreams of becoming a venture capitalist. Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich is one of his favorite books. He keeps a journal of the philanthropic things he hopes to do, like opening a community center. But the ongoing drama surrounding his playing status had drained him. On December 19, Wiseman withdrew from college. "It was just overwhelming," says Hardaway. "I get the NCAA has a job to do, but he was like, 'Hey, man, I haven't done anything. Why am I being punished?'" Wiseman began preparing for the draft. Basketball has evolved, but the center position is still available. Gone are the days of big men who post up near the rim. In are springy, versatile big men who can protect the paint, run the floor, rim roll off picks, and throw down jobs, lobs. If a big can also space the floor by shooting threes, a la Anthony Davis, then he's what every team is seeking. Wiseman is chiseled from that rim runner mold, says NBA scout. He's big. He's as big and as athletic as anybody in our league. But can Wiseman add the offensive game and long-distance shooting that could turn him into an all-star? He has studied fellow lefty David Robinson, noting the Spurs legend's agility and touch. Centers may not have hoisted threes in Robinson's time, but the Admiral commanded from mid-range. "Back then, there weren't a lot of big men that could shoot," Wiseman says. "He changed the game." In high school, Penny Hardaway also began to change Wiseman's jump shot, moving the release point from behind his head to closer to the front of it for a quicker and more accurate trigger. "That really took his range further out," says Hardaway. "He was always striving to get better." Wiseman wants his game to span generations, so during the pandemic, he doubled down on his own film work, particularly the 1980s Moses Malone and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He also studied Kobe. Wiseman never met Bryant. They crossed paths once at a camp when Wiseman was in high school, but he revered Bryant's approach. Wiseman devoured his books, a Harry Potter-type series conceived by Bryant in which the players discover their strengths. If you have ups and downs or struggles, you have got to be willing to have perseverance, not to be afraid to fail, to always just keep working, Wiseman said. There was a lot of great advice that came from that book. The Memphis experience behind him, Wiseman's love for the game has been restored. His family sees that. When Wiseman pops back into Nashville to visit, Artis has to make sure there is a gym open and available to him. "You can see it in the smile on his face," says Artis. "He eats, drinks, and sleeps basketball now. When we talk on the phone, he starts by telling me what his shot looks like. He's happy again." Things got even better when the Warriors took him. After an injury-plagued season, Golden State will once again be a tough team in the Western Conference. The Warriors took a hit when guard Klay Thompson suffered a second straight season-ending injury, which puts even more pressure on Wiseman to contribute. But he's up for the challenge. "Everything about this last year has been really hard," he says. "I'm ready to put it all behind me. I'm ready to move forward." Continuing on in the sections, The Science of Sports, this is an interesting article about chemistry, but not the kind you might think. What makes a team click? Miami's Jimmy Butler discusses the value of locker room vibes. The Miami Heat didn't have as much raw talent as the Boston Celtics or the Milwaukee Bucks, but guess which team ended up winning the Eastern Conference, nearly knocking off the Lakers in the finals. The Heat thrived because of their chemistry, the way in which their individual elements blended together. Chemistry is really important, says forward Jimmy Butler. You've got to like being around one another. If you're hanging around one another and you like being around one another, it's going to show out there on the basketball floor. There isn't going to be too much bickering because you realize, look, we're all human. We all make mistakes. Calm down. We get it. For a player like Butler, a vocal veteran on a team with many youngsters, it's important that all the personalities gel. That hasn't always been the case on his past teams. But in Miami, he was able to develop relationships that allowed him to speak freely to his teammates. If you rock with that individual off the floor, he knows I've got his best interest at heart, Butler says. I'm not just getting on you because I got nobody else to yell at. Butler sees the Heat as having won another big season. I think it's going to be the same way. Basically, got the same group of guys, and science backs him up. Noshir Kontraktor, a professor of behavioral sciences at Northwestern University, performed a study recently that had attempted to measure that team chemistry. The study found that teams with players who had experience together in winning situations won more than teams that simply had good players. That's why so many teams filled with big names don't get results, including the first year of the Heat's Big Three of LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. They had not had time to come together. Professor Kontraktor likens the bond teammates forge to one seen in nature. If you are able to bring together hydrogen and oxygen with the right chemistry, he says, you get water, which is something greater than the sum of its parts. And in the same thing, we have something called titration, brewing up something good. Jimmy Butler didn't just make headlines for his play in the NBA bubble. He gained notoriety for running Big Face Coffee, a pop-up shop that provided quality drinks to NBA stars. Butler charged $20 a cup, no matter the size. Two cups were $50. Why? His clientele could afford it. While his pricing was something of a joke, Butler takes his coffee seriously. I wish I could take 5 years off and open a cafe, he says. On a trip to Europe before last season, he spent a lot of time in cafes talking to patrons. What do you have in your cup? Do you love skim milk or almond milk? Before you know it, you're in there for an hour and a half just learning about people, which is what I truly enjoy whenever I meet, when I get to go outside of being an athlete. Butler was never a serious coffee drinker until his trainer, James Scott, pointed something out to him. He told me, you know, coffee is actually good for you in moderation, right? And it is. Among the more than 1,000 compounds in coffee are valuable nutrients as well as antioxidants, which slow damage to the cells in the body. And the caffeine in coffee can, in moderation, improve energy levels and mental function. Butler is constantly testing new methods of roasting, which brings out the flavor in the green beans. As he's mastering the science of coffee, he's also moving on to the art. What we are really studying and focusing on now is how to do a little artwork on the top of the coffee, he says. It's so hard, dude. I'll bet it is. I'll bet it is. Still in the science of sports, there's something called tribology, T-R-I-B-O-L-O-G-Y. And the headline for this article is banned for being too well engineered. Sometimes progress looks a lot like cheating. When equipment suddenly makes everyone better at a sport, it's called technology doping. The most famous instance remains the LZR Racer swimsuit from Speedo. The swimwear company partnered with NASA to create a skin-tight suit that came out in 2008. The LZR Racer, which covers the racer's torso and legs, uses a space-age material that causes less friction with water than does human skin. At the 2008 Olympics, 25 world records fell, in large part thanks to the LZR Racer swimsuit. The suit was soon banned. Nike's Alpha Fly shoes, which have a carbon fiber sole that allows runners to lose less energy with each step, barely avoided being banned for this year's Summer Olympics. Ever since Bill Sutter flew onto the field at halftime of the first Super Bowl, sports fans have been enthralled at the possibilities presented by jetpacks. Sutter also made an appearance at the opening ceremonies of the 1984 Summer Olympics. Dreamers imagined the day when football would be played in midair by jetting jocks. Now, 55 years later, we're still stuck on terra firma. Sutter's original pack could only keep him aloft for 20 seconds, which is hardly long enough to run more than a quick play. And it discharged a 1,300, that's 1,300 degree blast of steam, which makes blocking and tackling very tricky. The good news is there's been progress. Current technology allows for speeds of well over 100 miles per hour for 10 minutes. There's a catch, though. The main obstacle is permission from the Federal Aviation Administration to fly, says Boris Jerry, operations director of Jetpack Aviation. Like any aircraft, you can't just fly where you want. Jetpacks are also very expensive. While Jerry doesn't expect to see jetpack football anytime soon, he hopes there will be other forms of competition. We're already discussing different projects where we will fly the jetpacks in a game or a race, he says, and I bet this will be within the next 24 months. Until that time, we are going to have to rely on the Mandalorian to satisfy our jetpack cravings. That takes us on to biochemistry. Why can't we run a 3-minute mile? Roger Bannister is widely credited for running the first ever 4-minute mile in 1954 at Oxford University. The current world record, Hakan Egroj, 3.43.13 mile, happened more than 20 years ago in 1999. Have humans run as fast as they can? Will a new Roger Bannister emerge to break the 3-minute barrier? The former question is uncertain, but scientists have reason to believe a sub-3-minute mile is physically impossible. Can't be done. Usain Bolt, the fastest sprinter alive, ran 100 meters in 9.58 seconds. Extrapolated to a mile, about 1,609 meters, that pace would mean a 2.34 time. Yet, Bolt has never run a mile, and some fans doubt his ability to break even the 5-minute barrier. The reason has to do with oxygen. In a sprint, a runner can go all out. In a run requiring even a moderate distance, the athlete is limited by their body's ability to move oxygen via the bloodstream. The body breaks down glucose, a sugar molecule, using oxygen to create energy. If an insufficient amount of oxygen is present, the body produces lactate, which causes muscle cramping and weakness. Humanity's inability to run a 2.5 mile, that's 2 minute 59-second mile, has nothing to do with strong legs and springy shoes, but a fundamental limit of our biology. You know, we don't necessarily have only people on Earth standing around trying to go faster, jump taller, stay in shape. It's also present in space. This article is titled Staying in Shape in Space, under the heading of Astronautics. Eat your heart out, Noah Syndergaard. A 100-mile-per-hour fastball is nice and everything else, but it's nothing compared to the pitch Jessica Meyer threw to open the 2019 World Series. Since she was on the International Space Station, the ball was traveling more than 17,000 miles per hour when it left her hand. She says, I had the fastest fastball on record. It's a fun thing to think about. Is it ever going to slow down? And the answer is no, not unless it is counteracted. So props to follow astronaut Drew Morgan, who got a piece of the heater. When you spend as much time in space as Meyer did, she was on the International Space Station for 205 days, you have to come up with ways to amuse yourself. There are certainly sports astronauts play. People get pretty creative in terms of perfecting their Superman run, pushing off and seeing if you can get down the entire length of the space station without touching anything, she says. Astronauts in microgravity spend a surprising amount of time engaged in physical activity. They work out for 2.5 hours every day. Just like on Earth, exercise is extremely important in terms of keeping us healthy and fit, but it's even more important in space, Meyer says. That's because without gravity, we would lose our muscle mass. Our muscles would shrink. Our bone density would decrease. Even when we're not exercising, just sitting here in a chair on Earth, I'm still reaching to this gravitational vector. The weight of gravity is keeping me down, and my muscles and bones are reacting against that. So when you go into space, you immediately will start losing that muscle and losing that bone density because you don't need it. You're not reacting to gravity. Lifting weights in a weightless environment is tricky, so NASA scientists came up with a system of vacuum tubes and flywheel cables to create resistance. And cardio workout is important as well. Engineers came up with a harness that keeps the astronauts on a treadmill so they can run. They also ride bikes. What is unique about a bike in space? Meyer asks. Well, what don't you need? There's no seat and no handlebars in the bike because we don't need them. You just clip in your pedals and you go. I like to think of it as a unicycle in space. Have you ever wondered if there are sports on other planets? Well, that's the title of our next article under astronomy. And it is an interview with Bill Nye, the science guy. And he says, why wouldn't there be? SI Kids asked, how many planets in the universe might be home to intelligent life? And Bill Nye says, well, so let's run the numbers. Let's say we have 200 billion stars in our galaxy with 10 planets each. That's 2 trillion planets. Let's say 1 in 1 million of those has intelligent life. That's 1 million planets that might have life. And that's just our galaxy. There has got to be other Earth-like planets. People ask me, do you believe in aliens? It's not something you believe in. It's more like, do you expect that there are aliens? I say, yeah. Next question, what might sports on other planets look like? Well, when you go into the ocean, you have all these crazy creatures that could not survive up on land in a gravity environment. And so it's very reasonable to me that sports on other worlds are all underwater. The whole thing, there's a whole world that is just water. SI Kids, everything underwater? Bill Nye, yeah. And they wouldn't even think of dry land, and they'd wonder why you would want to run around in air. You would dry out and collapse. You've got to have bones to keep you in shape. What the heck? It's awful. I'm paraphrasing. But keep in mind, my fellow scientists, I'm an earthling made of water trying to think about what life would be like on other worlds. And it's probably no coincidence that I thought, oh, you've got to have water. I'm made of water. So there's got to be water. On survival of the fittest, Bill Nye says, hold on a minute. Ended too soon. So he said here, there's got to be water. And it continues, but it could be, as I like to say, a whole another thing out there, a whole another system. So SI Kids ask, if humans went ice fishing on Jupiter's moon, Europa, what kind of alien fish could they pull up? We don't know, man, says Nye. Europa has a shell of ice, in some places 20 miles thick, but under it is liquid ocean. So if you have liquid water for 4.5 billion years, is there something alive there? Maybe. How cool would that be? Well, let's say we could drill through the ice. Are there European fish people? I've got a feeling they wouldn't look not that different from creatures on our in our own ocean. First of all, there'd be a bunch of creatures with no skeleton or shape, and they just move around with the currents. And then I could also easily imagine a more sophisticated form of life that has a structure like a skeleton. And they would swim around doing European fish people things, I guess. Next question is, so technically there could be sports on Europa. Bill Nye says, oh yes, there's got to be water polo under the ice on Europa. I'm counting on it. And then that other comment about survival of the fittest. Once molecules found a way to make copies of themselves, says Nye, they have been competing. So deep within us is the idea of competing. Mr. Nye has some other things to comment on, like marine biology. He was asked whatever fish might be lurking on the ice on Europa. Chances are Steve Wozniak has seen something stranger on his quest to catch as many types of fish as possible. He's reeled in 1,977 different species in 94 countries, and his favors, the glorious swallowtail. From East Africa is one of the most physically striking fish I've ever caught. It looks like a giant, decorative goldfish on steroids. Wow, that's kind of neat. Definitely. And for what I think is our last article in this section under aerodynamics, what would a curveball look like on Mars? Well, I bet all of you have played Pingo, says Bill Nye, and you've seen how you can make the ball curve like crazy by getting it spinning. When you get it spinning, some of the air sticks to the surface. But the atmosphere of Mars is 0.7% of the atmospheric pressure of Earth. So with that little air, there isn't much for a baseball to get a grip on. So it would be very difficult to get a baseball spinning that fast. To get a baseball to curve on Mars, you would need 130 times as much spin. So instead of spinning at 1,200 revolutions per minute, you would have to spin your baseball at 15,000 revolutions per minute. The rules on Mars may change, and you'll be allowed to have a spin machine on your spacesuit. Now that might be really cool. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated's Kids. We hope that you have enjoyed it. I am Dick Hayden, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And if you have any comments or questions, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, and be sure to tune in next time.